Good afternoon, everyone. When God speaks directly to His people, you can say what God has to say is very important. I would like to have everyone to turn their Bibles to Exodus 20. Here we will read something I believe is very significant. In chapter 19 of Exodus, Moses was told by God to have the nation of Israel assemble at the base of Mount Sinai. Every man, woman, and child of all the 12 tribes assembled at the base of Mount Sinai. Now, while that exact number of people who were there is not really known, but if you look at the commentaries, I've seen low figures of from 1 million up to 2+ million people were there. And that's a lot of people. And what happened next was very memorable to them. God would descend on Mount Sinai in the form of a thick cloud, lightning, thunders. And in Exodus 21, let's read what he says. And God spoke all these words, saying. Now what follows next is this booming voice of God and His instructions to His people. Now, we call these instructions the Ten Commandments. Now, let's drop down to Exodus 20, verse 15, and read this. You shall not steal. Now, we know this statement as the Eighth Commandment. Today, let's take a closer look at the Eighth Commandment to see not only the physical intent, but the spiritual intent of what stealing is all about and what we as Christians can do in this area. Now, Strong's Hebrew dictionary from the word steal comes from the Hebrew word ganab, G-A-N-A-B. It means to thieve, both literally and figuratively, by implication to deceive, carry away, get by stealth. Now, in Webster's dictionary, the English word steal means to take or appropriate another's property, ideas, etc., without permission, dishonesty, or unlawfully, especially in a secret manner, or to get or take without permission. It also means to be a thief, to practice theft. When we obey God's command that we are not to steal, we are respecting the property and possessions of others. It also allows people to conduct business in a godly way that is fair and honest. I think it's very clear that when you take someone's property without their permission, you are stealing. Can you think of other areas where one can steal? What's the fastest form of stealing today? Well, the Department of Commerce last year said that in the 5-year period between 1998 and 2003, 10 million Americans had their identity stolen. Last month, the Department of Commerce announced that in the year 2004, 10 million Americans had their identity stolen that year alone. Now, we're talking about an exponential increase here of identity theft. Now, 2005 doesn't look any better. In March, the Bank of America announced that their computer tapes of 1.2 million federally employees' Visa cardholders' information mysteriously disappeared. Also, a number of information data collection companies had their computer files compromised. Now, when you hear the word compromised, you just think stolen. In fact, the collection company LexisNexis reported in March alone, 330,000 people had their identity stolen by computer hackers. The computer magazine InfoWorld just last week reported that an investigation of that company has showed up that it's been 59 other times the information has been stolen from that company, but the numbers of people affected were not disclosed. So we can see that identity theft is a form of stealing that can ruin a person's name and reputation. Now, I'd like to quote a poem I read. I don't know who the author is, but the poem goes like this. Who steals my purse steals trash, but he that flinches from me my good name robs me of that which not enriches him and makes me poor indeed. The Bible also points out another form of stealing. Let's go to Malachi 3 and verse 8. And let's read this. Will a man rob God? Yet you have robbed me, but you will say, where have we robbed you? And God's answer is, in tithes and offerings. So what's the consequences when we do this, when we rob God? Well, the answer is actually in verse 9. You are cursed with a curse, for you have robbed me, even this whole nation. In this case, we can rob God by not giving to him what is due. We are spiritually stealing from God at this time. Can you think of other areas where we can steal? How about you can steal time that does not belong to you? Now, example of this is of the office worker who sits in front of this computer screen, and when the boss is not around, they're playing games on the computer, like Hearts, for example. Can you think of other areas where you can steal time that does not belong to you? You know, our local congregation here has its services on the second Sabbath at 2 o'clock. Second Sabbath, 2 o'clock. And we rent the hall from 1 to 8. The other Sabbaths of the month where our services are at noon and we go from 10 o'clock to 3 p.m. Now, the reason why we meet on the second Sabbath later is that because there's a group that precedes us in this hall, and they have rented it prior to our time we get here. Now, during the last 5 weeks, I've been handing out bookmarks that I've made. I list three scriptures from Psalms, Proverbs, Exodus, and one I wrote out from 2 Thessalonians, which I will talk about later. Now, if you receive this bookmark from me, did you read the third scripture? It says Exodus 20, 15. And that's what we're talking about today, is stealing. You see, what's happened is that we as a congregation are arriving early and taking time from that group that has rented this hall before us. Now, we are infringing on their time that they have paid for. Let me put it a little differently. Let's say that we come in this hall and there's a group that follows us. And 15 minutes before we go, the members of the second group are starting to come in. 10 minutes, there's some more people coming in. And in 5 minutes, there's more people coming in. And what do? Well, they go in the kitchen and start banging around making coffee, and they put their personal belongings at vacant tables where we are fellowshipping. And others are moving things around the hall to fit their congregation or their group, let's say. Would we feel shortchanged if we did not get our full hour that we paid for? Would it make a difference if no one followed us and we left the hall 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes later than our scheduled time? Now, our goal as a church is to preach the gospel to the world in the hope that it makes a difference to the world. It might make all the difference in the world to the employee of the city of Bellevue that has to close up the building. If we're 5, 10, or 15 minutes late, then we have infringed on that person's time. You see, the situation is we do not own this building. The sign out here at the front at the entrance says, North Bellevue Community Center. The time that we rent this hall is no longer a community center. In reality, it is a hospital. It's a hospital where you and I can come and be healed by our Creator and healed of all those things that keep us in bondage to sin. But what is sin? Now, the Bible defines sin as whoever commits sin also commits lawlessness, and sin is lawlessness. That's 1 John 3:4. Now, as the King James Version puts it, sin is the transgression of the law. Now, Jesus said in John 15:10, if you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. Abiding means the practice of godly love through keeping the commandments of God. Let me ask you something. If we could snap our fingers today and everyone in the world kept this 8th commandment, what difference would it make in the world as we wait for God's Son, Jesus Christ, to return? Imagine this. All you and your auto insurance, your costs would be less because insurance companies do not have to pay for stolen vehicles or the contents that they're in if they've been stolen. How about you homeowners? Your fees would be less because you don't have to pay because no one's burglarized your home. And think about this. It would change the occupations. The banks would no longer would have to hire security people, armored car drivers. In all facets of our life, we would be financially enriched. I'd like to give you a couple examples of what we can do about this. One is, I want to share a story that I think I've shared a long, long time ago with some of you. One was when I was 6 years old, my mother took me to the store. And she's pushing the cart down the aisle. I wanted some caps. And my mom said, no, you can't have them. We have to wait to payday. And as she went past the toy section, I reached out and I grabbed a box of caps and I stuck them in my pocket. Well, they got home. I said, Mom, I'm going to go outside and play in the backyard. She said, fine. So I went to my bedroom. I got my cap gun. I went out in the backyard, and I shot everything up I could see. I heard the door open, and my mom came out. Excuse me. With an expression on her face I have never, ever seen. She came up to me, and she said, you stole those caps. And I was waiting for the biggest spank in my life, but it never came. She said something worse that frightened me. She said, you and I are going to go over to the store, and you're going to tell Annie what you did. Now, Annie was the clerk at the store. So we got back. There was 2 people in line. We were in the 3rd in line, and we finally got up to the cashier, Annie. And Annie said, June, that's my mom. She said, did you forget something? She said, no. She turned to me and she said, now, Brett, tell anyone what you did. Well, I was scared, petrified, and just tears just rolled in my eyes. I said, I stole a box of caps. I was crying. And I look back now, and I can tell you that no parent ever done that to the clerk because she didn't know what to do. She said, that's okay. My mom's kind of stiffened up, and she said, no, it's not okay to steal. And she reached in her purse, and she pulled out a little coin purse. And in those days, This is back in the early 50s. There was a little plastic coin purse. It was kind of oval shaped with a slit down it. And you would pinch it and you'd bring your coins out. And my mom put the coins on the counter. The lesson that I learned from that is, brethren, we must teach our families about this law of stealing. In fact, God says something about it in Deuteronomy 6. He says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your strength. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up." So that's the first thing we can do about stealing is teach our family first before we teach the world. So what's the second lesson we can do about stealing? Well, I like to have everybody do what? It's going to take about 20 seconds. I like to have your hands free, so probably put everything in your lap. And I want everybody just to go like this, see that your hands are free. Okay, everybody. Okay, you can put them down. I'm going to go 1, 2, 3, go, and I'm going to clap. Okay, I want you to do this. Ready? 1, 2, 3, clap. Now, did you see what you just did? You followed what I did. You didn't listen to my words. So how powerful is my actions? They were more powerful than my words. So the second lesson about stealing is that our actions must be the same as our words, to the point that we're not double-minded. We're unified in this area. You know, there's some people say that the Ten Commandments have been done away with, and that's a whole different subject. But they haven't been done. What are the Ten Commandments? What is this about stealing? What is the root of this? A while back, we had a sermon from Steve Kuhn, who talked about the core. And what is that? Your core as a mortal being is different from what is at the core of God. Now our goal is that our core will be like God. And that's why we're here today. See, at the core of God and His being in Jesus Christ is love. Total and absolute love. Keeping this commandment of not stealing, while we're not required to keep it for the law, I mean, we don't earn salvation by keeping this. We never did. But we keep it because the love that is in us. Christ came and set the example. He never stole. He set the example that we should do also. And that is at the heart, the core of God the Father. Pure, absolute love. And that's what we need to do, brethren. So these two things, teach and be an example, there's some things that we can do about keeping this commandment not stealing. I'd like to close and say that we've seen that there's different forms of stealing, physical and spiritual. The heart of this law is really a spiritual law. It is all about love. And as we keep this law, we will grow in love to our neighbor in ways that is profound. The road behind us is insignificant compared to what the road ahead of us and what God has stored for us. God has in store for us greatness. If we are to become like Him, we must be like Him. If we do this, brethren, you and I, will become better individuals. We will make for better families. And we will become a stronger congregation.